In our Midrash class, we're going to be looking at a very important question. And the question is, was Yitzchak a Nebuch? Now, of course, I'm going to tell you, I don't want to cut to the chase, but the answer is no. Okay, he is Yitzchak Avinu. But and that's, of course, the conclusion that we're going to get to. But the problem that we're faced with is that when you look at him in the story of the Chumash, first of all, he gets very little screen time. All of his screen time is mostly one chapter in Parshas Toldos. And in every story that he's involved in, except for in that one chapter, he doesn't look like he's very involved in any story, right? Just to give you, well, when he's born, we'll leave that. Okay, he's a baby, but at the Akedah, you know, he's being dragged along. Doesn't seem to have any will or skin in the game. In Parshas Chayisara, Abraham decides, all right, my son needs to get married, but he's not going to go off and find a wife for himself. I'll send a servant. I'm not even going to go myself. I'm going to send my guy to go find a wife for him. And then she comes, and Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. We're going to get into what lasuach basadeh means. But he's talking to himself in the field. I mean, that's what he looks like. And Rivka sees him, like, okay, fine. Then he brings it to the tent of Sarah. You know, and it's not even clear, by the way, if he knows that Sarah is dead. Because the pasuk it doesn't tell us. It just says he brings Rivka ha'oel ha'saraimo to his mother's tent, and then after he marries her, vayinachem Yitzchak achareimo. What does he say? He marries her vayavah. Then he loves her, which means he grows to love her, which of course makes sense because he just met her, right? And then we get into Parshas Toldos, which has most of Yitzchak's story. So the first thing which we see in Parshas Toldos, which is on page 124, we're told that Yitzchak married Rivka when he was 40. We saw last week in the class about Rivka and Rivka's pregnancy and her age, Rivka's heavy involvement in her own pregnancy. Of course, Yitzchak's role is not insignificant. The pasuk, for example, says in Pasuk of Aleph on page 124, verse 21. That Yitzchak entreats Hashem opposite his wife because she was barren. So it would seem that they're both involved in this. And God turns to Yitzchak's, or as our school translates, Hashem allowed himself to be entreated by him, meaning by Yitzchak. And so Yitzchak's tefillah, as it were, brings about the Rivka's barrenness from to its conclusion, so that Rivka can have children. And then we don't see Yitzchak in the rest of this chapter, because it's mostly the Yaakov and Esav story with the soup, which we'll just leave for a different time. We will be getting to that in the coming weeks. And then you have Perek Chavav, which is the main chapter. Chapter 26 is Yitzchak's involvement with Avimelech, Plishti, Yitzchak getting involved with all the wells that he gets involved with, Yitzchak becoming financially successful when he founds a Haredi city. If you look at the last pasuk in Sheni, Vayizra Yitzchak Baretz Ahi, Vayimtza Bashana Ahi Me'esharim. See? He created this Haredi city. Me'esharim. Anyway, Vayivarecheu Hashem, 100 gates. It's just a euphemism for wealth, and then God blesses him. Things are good, and if you look at the next pasuk after that pasuk Gedalad, you see Vayhilo Miknei Tzon Miknei Bakar Vabudar Abba Vayikanu Oso Plishtim. So he had a lot of sheep. He had a lot of bakar, right? Different kinds of cattle, and other lots of things going on. Many enterprises, or this is the way our school translates Vabudar Abba Vayikanu Oso Plishtim, and the Plishtim were jealous of him. So now we can't call a guy about whom the pasuk says that a loser. Okay? We can't call him a nebuch. He's a successful individual. Just because he doesn't get a lot of screen time, right, doesn't mean, lahavdil, many havdalas, right? So I just took up my kids to see the new Mary Poppins movie. So the new Mary Poppins movie, all right? If you haven't seen it, okay, I recommend it. Right? It's a fun movie. I liked it. Okay? So you can hear it. You got to go see for yourself. This is why you don't take the words of the critics. Sometimes the critics are critical, and sometimes you say, hey, guys, just, like, you know, untighten the bundle, and you can enjoy. Okay? Anyway, so At the very end of the movie, there's a very famous actor who makes a cameo, and actually at 93 years old does a jig on a table, and his name is Dick Van Dyke, and he was in the original, and he plays the grandson of the banker who he plays in the first one, but he basically has reached the age, right? He's now actually playing his own age, and he's a successful banker, he owns his bank. Now, how much screen time does he get in this movie? 90 seconds. But you can't say that the character isn't a successful character because he owns this huge bank, and he even fires his nephew at the very end of the movie, who's been running the bank on his orders. Okay, so this is that's the story. So Yitzchak gets very little screen time, but he's clearly a successful guy. So to say that he's a nebuch or a loser is totally, I think, out of line in light of the evidence which we have here. And he clearly holds his own with Avimelech, and when they come back to him and they make another treaty with him, one of my favorite lines is. Pasuk Chav Zayin, page 132. Right, Avimelech, after they've kicked Yitzchak out of Gerari, and he had to live in Nachal Gerar, and later on he's in Be'er Sheva, so Avimelech and Fichol Sar Tzva'o, Fichol's general, they come, and Yitzchak says to them, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayomer Elim Yitzchak Madu Abasem Elai. He says, why did you guys come to me? Yatem Sineisem Osi, you guys hate me, Vatashaluchuni Me'itachem, and you sent me away. So, I mean, a guy who can't hold his own in a conversation is not going to be this confrontational. Guys, I'm sorry, you want to make peace with me? You threw me out. You hated me. You were mean to me. You stuffed my wells. I mean, listen, if you're really coming in peace, fine. Then we can have that conversation. But if you're going to just do what you did before, then there's nothing to talk about. Okay, this is not a loser guy. He knows what's going on. He knows the score. Okay, then the next thing that we see with Yitzchak essentially is the story with Yaakov and Esav, with the brachas, and the problem that we have for Yitzchak is that he seems so easily duped by Yaakov. There are plenty of explanations for that, and we'll get into that hopefully in a class about Yaakov's role there. But of course, there's a few things that are going against Yitzchak. Number one, he is aging. Number two, he's blind. Okay, he can't see. And number three, the fact of the matter is, Yaakov and Esav are twins. And we can talk about whether they're identical, not identical. I mean, the Torah, in describing their birth, seems to indicate that they're not identical. Right? Okay? One's Admoni, Kulo Kaderes Sear, you know, whatever that means. He's red. He's got hair. Yaakov is an Ishtam. Tam might mean smooth. You know, but Yaakov is doesn't look the same as Esav. That doesn't mean that they can't have the same kind of face, meaning they're not twins. They're not identical twins, but it doesn't mean that they're not coming from the same mold. They've got the same DNA, right? I mean, you sometimes see paternal twins, right? Paternal is when they're non-identical, right? Who still look alike. Fraternal, whatever, yeah, same thing, paternal. Fraternal, yeah. But they still look alike. Why? I mean, siblings could look alike. Siblings who are different ages can look alike. So even if they're not identical, they could still look alike, and there's a resemblance, and they've been living together for a very long time. So for Yaakov to be able to imitate Esau's mannerisms is not so crazy. Okay, they grew up together. They're twins. They've known each other since day one. So the idea that Yitzchak gets fooled there, again, is not so crazy. And then at the end of that. And of course, you know, Yaakov was in cahoots. Again, I use cahoots just to be a little cheeky, but he was instructed by his mother to do this. And so in whatever way that the stack was against Yitzchak, of course he could be fooled. So now the thing is, what happens when Esav walks in? And this is the last thing which we're going to be looking at now. Though I will mention one more thing afterwards, but what happens when Esav walks in? It's page 138, okay? Let's see. So it's in the middle of the page. Esav in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, says, "Go ask him about him and by Aviv, he also prepared food and he brought it to his father. Esav, the real Esav, says to his father, Yakum Aviv Yochal Mitzed Beno, my father should get up and eat from his son's trappings, the food that he prepared, so that you will bless me. Yitzchak, his father, says to him, who are you? And he says, I am Bimcha b'chorecha Esav, your son, your eldest, Esav. And here's Yitzchak's reaction. Yitzchak had a tremendous tremble. Okay, you have the word charada twice. Vayacharad, and he trembled, a great tremble. Ad ma'od, very much. Vayomer, and he says, Mi efo hu hatzad sayid, who was the one who came and he prepared the food? Vayaveli, brought it to me. Va'ochal mikol, and I ate all of it. B'terem tavo, before you came, just before you came, he was just right here. Because the pasuk tells us that in pasuk lamed, Yaakov is going out, and as Yaakov is going out from one door, Esav is coming in from a different door. So Yitzchak says, "Vavarachem," and I blessed him. Gam baruch yeh, and he should keep the blessing. Okay, he should still be blessed. So Esav hears this, and he asks Yitzchak for another bracha, and you know, we're familiar with that story. And then at the very end, afterwards, Rivka comes over to Yitzchak and says, I don't want Yaakov marrying any of the local girls, so you got to send them away. And Yitzchak gives Yaakov the bracha that he's supposed to give him, the bracha which was given to him from Avraham, which was given to Avraham by God, about you're going to inherit this land and you're going to have children, etc., 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 etc. Yitzchak sends off Yaakov, and that's the end of Yitzchak's story in the Chumash. Okay, Yitzchak makes a couple more appearances, really just in Parshas Vayishlach. Yitzchak appears when Yaakov comes back to Beis Hillel, and he meets Yitzchak again, and then Yitzchak dies. And even though Yitzchak's death doesn't really take place until a year before Yosef gets out of the prison, if you do the math, and the Gemara Megillah has this, it shows us that Yitzchak dies 10 years before Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim. Okay, we know how old Yaakov was when he came down to Mitzrayim. How old is he? When he came down, he came with 70 people. Paro asks him, he says, how old are you? 130. Okay, and we know that Yitzchak was 60 when Yaakov was born. So how old is Yaakov when Yitzchak dies? Yitzchak's going to die at 180. Yaakov is 120. So that means that 10 years before Yaakov came down, that's when Yitzchak died. But his death is mentioned in Parshas Vayishlach because there his story is over. Okay, and why I say it's 10 years before Yaakov came down, that's a year before Yosef got out of jail. Yosef gets out of jail, and then there's 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine before Yaakov comes down, so that's 9 years. So 1 year earlier, Yosef, for the beginning of Yosef's last year in jail, that's when Yitzchak dies. Okay, so we have this whole setup of Yitzchak, and we're kind of mixed because we're not sure what to make of both his involvement in the stories that he's involved in, contrasted with those few psukim that give us evidence of such an incredible strong personality, and everything else where he kind of looks like he's not an imposing figure in the Yaakov. In the Yaakov and Esav bracha story, Yitzchak just really looks like he's reaching, and he just can't grasp whatever he's grasping. He's doing every single test under the sun, except for seeing. I can't see him, so he's smelling him, he's touching him, he's tasting. What else can he do? He hears him. He says, "Akol kol Yaakov," right? Everything he could possibly do, and he still doesn't get it. So that's where this question comes from. Okay. So I gave you all the references in the Chumash. Of course, there's more in these prakim in the chapters here. But now we're going to put the Chumash aside. Don't close it, just in case we have to reference it again. But we're going to look at the source material, and on account of the interest in time, we're going to we'll read the English. And if there's something in the Hebrew which I need to particularly emphasize, then we'll do that. All of these midrashim, the translations are mine. So if there are mistakes in them, that's, then I'll own it. I'm a big enough boy. I can do that. Okay, so let's look at the beginning midrash. Midrash Tanchuma, Parshas Chayisara. Hey, he says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, Avram established the morning prayer. Yitzchak established the afternoon prayer. Yaakov established the evening prayer. Okay, so I mentioned that passage before. When Rivka comes, Ayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Wasadet. That is considered to be the time that when Yitzchak is out in the afternoon, walking around to talking. Who's he? He's talking to himself? That's the way I put it before. No, he's not talking to himself. He's talking to God. And he's establishing tefillas mincha. Well, a person who can establish mincha, is that a nebuch? I think he pretty much said something for all time. So, kol hakavod, that's one thing. Echa rabba. Echa rabba. Ascribes a conversation that Avram had with God. Avram says to God, Lord, after 100 years, you gave me a son. When he was 37 years old, you said to me to raise him as an offering before me. And we talked about Yitzchak's age. There is a party line that says Yitzchak was 37. I shared with you at the time a different perspective on Yitzchak's age at the time of the Akedah. But anyway, but in the Midrash, they often go with this idea that he was 37.
What is the other age
teenager, 13. There is another view, which I don't think I shared with you, that he may have been 26. Okay? But anyway, basically, there's an option in the 10s, 20s, and 30s. Okay? It's different. Okay? And there is another option that he was even younger, but Ibn Ezra rejects that because Yitzchak carries the wood. That's the argument that Ibn Ezra makes. He says that some say Yitzchak was as little as 5, but if he's carrying all that wood, there's no way. That's his view. Anyway.
Rivka was 3.
Right, again, so that's another argument. That was last week's class. We talked about how Rivka may not have been 3, that she may have been older. And the same argument about how she's carrying all that water, schlepping all that water. And when he was 37 years old, you said to me to raise him as an offering before me. And I treated him like a stranger. I had no mercy on him. I forced him to go to do your bidding. And you won't listen to me and have mercy now on my sons. Again, this is Echa Rabbah. So this is Abraham making an argument to God in the context of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Yitzchak said, what's Yitzchak's argument to God? When my father said, God will show himself a sheep, my son. Right? Remember Yitzchak on the way up to the Akedah says, Here's the fire and the wood. And where's the sheep? So when what did Avram say? Elohim yireh lo aseh li ola bani. God will show the sheep. So I did not go against your will, and I allowed myself to be tied of my own accord on the Mizbeach, and I stretched my neck under the knife, and you won't remember me and have mercy on my children? So what's this thing saying? What's this Midrash suggesting? That Yitzchak is the opposite of a loser. He's the opposite of a Nebuch. He says, I'm so well aware of what is going on here at this Akedah story. There is nothing being hidden from me. I completely understand. And what am I doing? They walked together. And so Yitzchak is saying, I went of my own will. I was willing to sacrifice myself. So if I could do that, God, can you at least hear me out and have mercy on my children?
Why didn't Yitzchak pray for... it was this part of the prayer when he was praying for children also?
So whatever it was that Yitzchak was experiencing there, okay, and there's more that we're going to be seeing about what happened in that particular place. Okay, and by the way, I'm letting you know in advance that every single midrash which I'm sharing with you today is meant to answer the question of our title, was Yitzchak a Nebuch, with the answer no. Okay, that's really the point. Okay, so yeah, are we biased? Yeah, we're biased. We have to be biased. It's Yitzchak Avinu, of course. Okay, Bereshis Rabbah, Parsha Samach, V'Yitzchak Bamibo. So this goes back to the end of Parshas Chayisara, right, when Rivka sees Yitzchak for the first time, and the pasuk there says that Yitzchak ba mi bo be'er lachai ro'i. That Yitzchak was coming from somewhere, that he went to be'er lachai ro'i. Why did he go to be'er lachai ro'i? Take a look at the Midrash. Yitzchak was coming back from death. From death? Where was he going? Be'er lachai ro'i. Okay, in other words, that he was essentially, this was Yitzchak's travel back from the Akedah. Okay? There is a view, and I think we actually saw this, I think I touched upon it in our Akedah class, that Yitzchak, after the Akedah, because the Torah says that Avram comes back from the mountain, and where does Yitzchak go, is the question. And one of the Midrashim says that Yitzchak actually went to Gan Eden. Some say he went to Yeshiva Shem Rever, that's a classic answer. Others say he went to Gan Eden to have a chavrusa with God for 3 years. Okay, in other words, that he essentially died. You know, whatever that means, I don't mean died in terms of no coming back, but just like Moshe can go up on a mountain for 40 days with no food or drink, Yitzchak can go to Gan Eden for a few years. And in Gan Eden there is food. Okay, so that he was coming back from there. Halach le'avias Hagar. He went to bring Hagar, she who sat on the well. You see how I underline the lines in the midrash. She yashva la be'er v'yamra l'cheho olamim re'ei be'elvoni. That's where you get the words be'er l'chai ro'i. She sat on the well, said to the chai olamim to see my suffering. Yitzchak went out in the field in the afternoon to talk. Talking refers to prayer. Rivka raised her eyes and saw Yitzchak. Rabbi Huna says she saw him entrenched in prayer and said, he is surely a great man. Vaday Adam Gadolhu. Okay, these different things. Now, why would Yitzchak be getting Hagar? So there is a view that, remember, after Yitzchak marries Rivka, that Avram goes ahead and marries a woman named Keturah. And what does everybody say? Not everybody, but most people say that Keturah was Hagar, that Yitzchak brought Hagar back. Okay, and because he said, look, if I'm, you know, why should my father be alone? And he had a wife, and he has a wife, so... just because she was sent away. And that's where, and Be'er Lachai Ro'i is where Hagar went when she left. So you just connect the dots, that's where Yitzchak is coming from. Yeah.
More than once that he went to Be'er Lachai Ro'i, would you see that, I think?
No, Hagar goes to Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Okay, and that's why Yitzchak is coming from Be'er Lachayroi, because he went to get Hagar. Okay, so again, all of these pieces, filling in some gaps for us, are showing us the anti-loser. The anti, right? He's taking the initiative. He wasn't allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, whatever. That's why he doesn't get a wife for himself. Because he was an Ola Tmima, he was a sacrifice, so he couldn't leave. But if he can go to Be'er Lachayroi, which is within the boundaries, and go get a wife for his father, I mean, call a kavod. Call a kavod. Yeah, Jerry.
Isn't it kind of impudent on part of Yitzchak to, without consulting Abraham, go to bring back Hagar?
It's a good question. First of all, we don't know if he did or did not consult. Fine. But also, so we don't hear about it, that's true. But also, if you actually look at the story, you see that Abraham never really wanted to throw her out. What was the impetus for throwing her out?
Sarah's
gone, right? And especially if you follow the idea that after the Akedah, Avram goes home, and Yitzchak doesn't, and Yitzchak's not present at Sarah's funeral. I mean, they're Yaakov and Esav are clearly at Yitzchak's funeral. It's mentioned. Okay, Rivka's funeral is not mentioned because Yaakov wasn't there, and Esav was there, and that's one of the reasons given in the Midrash for why Rivka's death is not mentioned, because it was only Esav who was walking behind her coffin, which would have been terribly embarrassing. But if Yaakov and Esav are both there, right? Who's at Avram's funeral? Yitzchak and Ishmael. It's mentioned. They're both there. So the idea that Yitzchak is unaware that Sarah is gone is actually quite compelling to me. And then if you say that after Yitzchak marries Rivka and sees that Sarah is gone, and at that point in time, like, he could have had a conversation, except the only problem is Be'er Lachayroi. That's the only problem. So that he's coming from Be'er Lachayroi, so maybe that would actually put a little bit of a monkey wrench there. Okay, I'll have to think about that a little more. So, because the way that I just suggested it, but which is contradicted by the text, is that Yitzchak came from Be'er Lachayroi before he goes into his mother's tent to discover that she's dead. So maybe he does know that she's dead. She's been dead for 3 years. Okay.
Why don't you bring it to her tent? I mean, if she's alive.
Right, no. Well, if he thinks she's alive, he could bring Rivka to go meet his mother. If he doesn't know that she's alive, well, same thing. And if he knows that she's dead, then this tent's been empty. It's been sitting empty for a few years. Let's see if you can pass the cloud, the dough, the candle. If you can pass all those tests. All right. Okay, so, but again, the Bereishis Rabbah just goes to show us a few things about Yitzchak. Bereishis Rabbah. So remember, one of the reasons why Yishmael had been thrown out of the house by Sarah was, she actually says the reason. She says, Lo yirash ben ha'ama azos b'din Yitzchak, that the son of this maid is not going to be inheriting with my son. Okay, and one of the, it's an interesting question that some address or raise. What was Yishmael doing that caused Sarah to get upset? Right, Rashi says that he was involved, right? Right. William Tell, right? Okay. If that were the case, then if Avram didn't see that and didn't kick him out of the house, then Avram is really out of his mind, right? And that was shooting arrows at Yitzchak, and that's it. Oh, it was fun, right? Okay, so there are a lot of interpretations and a lot of suggestions and a lot of possibilities, but my favorite one, and I don't remember who said it. I don't remember if it was the Chizkuni or the Ralbag. I don't remember who said it. No, it's very simple. What does Sarah say? Lo yirash ben ha'amaz azos b'ni in Yitzchak. Yitzchak is born, and Yishmael is saying, that kid's not the firstborn. I'm the firstborn. I'm getting everything. You guys can pamper him. You can fawn over him all you want. Guess what? End of the day, I'm Yishmael. I was born first. I'm the firstborn. And Sarah's saying, no, out. You were only born because I allowed you to be born. You're the son of the maid. You're not the son of the wife. Out of here. Okay? I mean, that's what Sarah says. Right? She doesn't say, this child is a danger to my child. Right? The word mitzachek is the word which is used. What is mitzachek? Mocking. Right? Yishmael is saying, oh, cute little baby, whatever, I'm the firstborn. As opposed to mitzachek, because there are so many possibilities of what the word mitzachek means. Mitzachek, Yitzchak was mitzachek as Rivka. Does anybody think he was shooting arrows at her? Was he killing her? Was he stealing from her? No, he was, you know, mitzachek, making her laugh. I mean, we can have other interpretations as well. But Avimelech assumes or figures out that they're husband and wife because Yitzchak is mitzachek as Rivka. Okay, and if we think that it's something nefarious that Yitzchak was doing, then we're not really paying attention. Okay, so that's the Bereishis Rabba. Yitzchak and Yishmael buried Avram at the cave Machpelah. The son of the maid gave respect to the son of the matriarch. Okay, so at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. And that this is the way that the Midrash is depicting the difference between, a difference between Yishmael and Yitzchak. Not that Yishmael is the son of Avram and Yitzchak is the son of Avram, but that Yishmael is the son of Hagar and Yitzchak is the son of Sarah. Bereishis Rabba Samach Gimel. So now we get into Parshas Toldos. Yitzchak besieged God opposite his wife. Rabbi Yochanan says he poured out his prayers with wealth. Reish Lakish, I don't know what that means. Tfilos Beosher. Reish Lakish says he turned over the decree, which is why he is called the overturner of decrees. Okay, kind ad Asra de Apich Idra. He was opposite his wife, which teaches us they were on opposite sides of a room, saying, please God, let all the children you give me come from this righteous person with me. And she would say the same thing also, I only want children from this righteous person. And by Yehoser Lo Hashem. Okay, the fact is, look, Rivka is no slouch. We know this. Rivka is very impressive. Very impressive. At the end of the day, whose prayer does God listen to? Yitzchak's. Yitzchak is the one who can overturn a gzera. Is that the work of a Nebuch? Sorry. I don't think so. And that's evidence from the pasuk by Yehoser Lo Hashem. Okay, then we move on into the next chapter. Bereishis Rabba Samach Dalet. How many wells did Yitzchak dig in Be'er Sheva? So there are two opinions. Rabbi Yehuda says four, Rabbanan say five. Okay, and then Rabbi Yehuda says that for the four, there were four flags or sections of encampment in the wilderness. If you remember, the Mishkan was in the middle, and then you had the Reuven Shimon Gad camp, and you had the Yehuda Yisachar Zvulun camp, and you had the Menashe Ephraim Binyamin camp, and you had the Dan Naphtali Asher camp, and those are the camps around the Mishkan. So he says that's what is symbolized in the four wells. But the rabbi said that there are five. Keneged the five books of the Torah. Keneged Chamisha Sifrei Torah. And then the Midrash goes on to explain how each of these is an indicator of that. And not only that, but it explains the significance of the meaning of the name. Okay, so Asek, for example, is Bereishis. And you could follow in the Hebrew here, actually. Shabonis Asek HaRash Baruch Hu Ba'asolam. That God was heavily involved and created the world. That's what you find in the book of Bereishis. The next one is Sitna, which is Shmos. Sitna comes from a word which satan, or hatred, right, or evil, and that is what takes place in the book of Shemos, at least in the beginning of the book of Shemos, with the slavery in Egypt. They found, I think that's a Hasidic soda company, right? Would you like Mayim Chaim, please? Mayim Chaim? Okay, so they found this Be'er Mayim Chaim, which is Vayikra, Shehu, Malay, Halachos Rabos. A Mayim Chaim literally means a live spring. So a live spring means that it's constantly giving. So Vayikra has many, many halachos, many laws in it, which is, it's like the never-ending story of halachos stemming from the book of Vayikra. The book of Vayikra has basically two narratives in it. The rest of it is halachos, right? You know what the two narratives are? The death of Nadav and Avihu, and the story of the blasphemer, the end of Parshas Emor. Everything else is mitzvahs and halachos. There isn't any narrative of significance beyond those. I mean, the Nadav and Avihu and the immediate aftermath of the Nadav and Avihu with Aaron's silence and Moshe's talking, that's narrative, but that's one story. Okay, next. Vayikra Usa Shiva, Keneged Sefer, I love this. This is just a fascinating instruction. Keneged Sefer, what's the fourth book of the Torah? Here, look what he says. Keneged Sefer Vayidaber. What's the first word in the book of Bamidbar? It is, right? He called the Midrash calls it the book of Vayidaber, which I just found to be fascinating. It really should be called the book of Vayidaber, but we call it Bamidbar. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe B'Midbar Sinai. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe. Now, what's the word? So, the first word in Bereishis is Bereishis. The first word in Shemos is Ve'ele Shemos. So, but Shemos is the second word. In Vayikra, the first word is Vayikra. The first word in Devarim is Ela HaDevarim. Okay. Here, it's the fifth word. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe B'Midbar Sinai. Okay, so, anyways, he calls it the book of Vayidaber. which Shehum Ashlim Shiva Sifrei Torah. The book of Vayidaber concludes the seven books of the Torah. Seven? What are you talking about? So he said, hello, aren't there five? Ela ben Kapor Avid Vayidaber, plus as far that this book of Vayidaber, okay, a.k.a. Bamidbar, is really actually three books, because you have Vayidaber until Vayimitzo Aron. If you look in chapter 11 in the book of, I'm getting so confused, the book of Vayidaber, the book of Bamidbar, you get to Vayimitzo Aron, the two psukim that describe the travels of the Aron. Those two psukim we're all familiar with, because it's Vayimitzo Aron and Uvnucho Yomar, right? Shuvah Hashem Revos Alfa Yisrael. So it's those two psukim, and that those are their own separate book. Okay, so again, min vaydaber ad vaybitso aron sefer b'fnei atzmo. So everything through chapter 11 of the book of vaydaber / book of Bamidbar is one book. Then vaybitso aron, from vaybitso aron udbasrei sefer b'fnei atzmo, umin sefer the piska v'ad sefer the sifra. So vaybitso aron until the end of that little section, it's just two psukim, is its own book. And from the end of that second pasuk until the end of the entire book, that is the third book of this book Vayidaber. So that's where he says that's why it's called Shiva, because Shiva means seven. It shows you that there's seven books, and since it's parallel to that book, that's the one that shows that there's seven books. And the last one is Rechovos. What's Rechovos? Keneged Mishnah Torah. Mishnah Torah is Devarim. Ki Yarchiv Ki Atah Yarchiv Hashem Lanu Farinu Baaretz. That what does it mean? Yerchiv Hashem Lanu, Hashem has expanded for us, and we can now grow in the land. And the book of Devarim essentially brings the people to that point, that they're ready to go into the land to fulfill that. So that's what Rechovos is. Okay, so again, what we see in this Midrash is, A, you know, on a very simple level, Yitzchak's involvement in the wells, which again, not the work of an Nebuch, and also the significance for the Bnei Yisrael for the future, in terms of the Torah, something which Yitzchak is establishing in a deep and profound way through just the names of the wells which he's digging up. Okay.
Next, the same wells that his father dug.
Some of them, but some of them were not. Some of them were not. Okay, you have to look through Toldos and just read through that. Some of the wells that he dug were the ones which he redug from his father. But Asik, Sitna, Rechovos, Be'er Mayim Chaim. See, Be'er Mayim Chaim is not clear that's another well. The Midrash is saying that it is another well. Right? The Psukim seem to indicate that his servants find the Be'er Mayim Chaim, and that's the one that they don't fight about, and that's Rechovos. Okay, but this is indicating that it is, you have Asik is number one, Sitna, Be'er Mayim Chaim, Shiva is another one that's discussed here, and Rechovo. So, but all of those are not Avram's wells. Those are all new wells. Okay? So that's just the way it is. Next, the Psikta Rabati says that Esav sinned through marrying idolaters. Vahayu me'ashanos lefnei avodas kochavim. They would smoke things up before their avodah zarah. One of the interpretations as to why Yitzchak became blind was, so I'm sure many are familiar with the tears of the angels, right? That's one interpretation. There are others, but the one, actually Rashi mentions this. I think it's the last Rashi in the previous chapter, right? In Perek Chav Zayin, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see. It describes... Is that where it is? The Oshnan Shel Elu. Okay, no, it's the first Rashi. Okay, the last Rashi in Perek, on the bottom page 132, says that they were a source of pain and suffering to Yitzhak and Rivka, Shehayu Odos Avodah Zarah, because they worshipped idols. And then the very next Rashi, which on the pasuk which describes Yitzhak's weakened eyes, on the top of page 134, Rashi says, Vatichena, that his eyes became weak because of the smoke of these. Can you see, where does he quote? He quotes Medrash Shanchuma, quotes Psikta Rabati, right? And I gave you the Psikta Rabati, okay? Peter the Parsha Zachor, etc. And then Rashi also quotes the idea about the tears of the angels. Right, and Rashi has a third approach. And I believe I recall that there's a fourth approach, but I don't remember. But the third one that Rashi mentions is that Yitzchak's eyes became weakened just so that Yaakov would be able to steal the brachas. Okay, but that doesn't suggest something causing it. It just suggests that God made it happen. Okay, as opposed to the smoke of these. So the question with the smoke, by the way, is how come it didn't affect Rivka?
Because
she grew up with it, right? It's like somebody who grows up in a smoker's house, you know. Secondhand smoke, I mean, it's probably killing them too, but they're...
And also...
When I'm near secondhand smoke, I choke up. I can't take it. But somebody who grew up in a smoker's house, even if they don't smoke, they're used to it, yeah.
It also goes against her being three when she left. I mean, how do you get...
Right, she had to have been... Right. That's an excellent point. Excellent point, Jerry. Okay, how does she get used to it if she was only in the house for a couple of years? All right.
She was used to being in the kitchen, so...
Okay. So now, this next section, this Bereishis Rabba Samach Zayin, describes, it really focuses on Yitzchak's reaction when Esav walks in. Okay? If you remember, we saw the pasuk which says, Vayecherad Yitzchak Harada Gadola, which in the Hebrew here is the quote verse. And what the Midrash does is it uses a couple of psukim from Mishle, both towards the end of their respective chapters. If you look at the top line, you'll see Mishle 29, Mishle Chavtes, right? So I gave you the translation of that pasuk. And then in the bottom, which in the English, which I put in a different font, you see it's Mishle 12:27. So those are a couple of the psukim that the Midrash is utilizing to help us get a sense of what Yitzchak is going through here. So having charada equals, the pasuk in Mishle, a man's fear entraps him, but he who trusts in God is strengthened. Entraps means the person is judged for a curse, but trusting in God means put strength in his heart and give him a blessing. The fear Yitzchak had when Esav walked in could have entrapped him to curse Yaakov, but remember what he says? Right before you came in and I blessed him, and what does Yitzchak say? Gam baruch yeah. He should remain blessed. Yitzchak had a choice. He could have said, ha! You know, I can't believe this guy stole your bracha. Stop! Well, Yitzchak had two problems. Number one, what did he say? Those who bless you, I will bless. For those who bless you, will be blessed. And those who curse you are going to be cursed. Yitzchak said, I just bless the guy that those who bless him are blessed. I can't curse him because then it comes back on me. So, Gam Baruch Yeh. So that's one. But the other one is the Pasuk of Mishle. The Pasuk of Mishle is that he who trusts in God is strengthened. So what does Yitzchak do immediately after he says, oh my goodness, who was the guy who took the blessing? Gam Baruch Yeh. Right? In other words, it was meant to happen. God made it happen. That bracha was supposed to go to that guy. If it was your brother, fine. Gam Baruch Yeh, he should be blessed. His trust in God caused him to bless Yaakov because he said, you know what? It was meant to be. It's Beshert. Yitzchak trembled when Esav walked in, even more than he might have trembled when on the Mizbeach. Okay, indicating that Yitzchak had a charada, right? A different kind of, I don't want to call it a hesitation, but a reverence for what was happening, for what might have been his destiny. But now he's saying that there's a different reason why Yitzchak was trembling. Not because of the flaw of giving the bracha to the wrong guy, but because when Esav came in, he was accompanied by Gehenim. Yitzchak trembled because of that eerie feeling and not because he gave Yaakov the blessings. Okay, so now that gets into a whole deeper understanding of what it is that Esav represents and how connected Yitzchak was. You ever see sometimes, like in a movie, there's a person who has some kind of powers that they can't explain? Maybe you saw the Sixth Sense, remember? I don't know if it was the late 90s. So there was a movie where this child could see dead people. Okay, now he didn't see them all the time, but he would see dead people. And it was very hard for him because they're walking around and they're present in whatever way that they're just dead, but nobody else knows about them. Nobody else can see them. So there's something about that, and it's with other kinds of, you know, magic powers that you sometimes see people have in movies, which are just unexplainable. Yitzchak being able to sense that Esav is accompanied by Gehenim is something which I can't relate to. I have no idea how to explain it. But it's that kind of eerie presence where you know, like for example, that the Malach HaMavos is in the room. Right? Sometimes you just have that, you know, you can feel energy. I truly believe. And I know that just as a rabbi, sometimes a talk, a speech, a sermon is hitting all the points, and there's energy in the room. Sometimes it's hitting no points, and there's schluff in the room. Okay, it happens. Okay, I remember not the last time, but the last time I was in a football game in New York, and the Giants were still good. Okay, long time ago, very long time ago. It's a very long time ago. So I remember when they came out for the opening kickoff, there was a roar in the crowd that was beyond electric. I mean, it was just so, you could feel it. Like, there's so much power in this stadium. They probably needed to power the power systems in Newark from East Rutherford. That's why they just did that. But seriously, you can really feel that kind of electricity. So what Yitzchak is feeling here is something beyond anything I can imagine, but that is what the Midrash is suggesting may have been causing his charada. A person who could feel that kind of energy or could have that kind of sense of Gehenna being present, accompanying Esav in, seeing the Malach HaMavis in the room and seeing how in what kind of terrible state Esav might be in. Is this a Nebuch? Is this a loser? No way.
But this must have been just a one-time thing. Otherwise, you would have noticed it about Esav all along.
Okay, that could be. But we don't see any other encounters of Yitzchak and Esav.
Must have.
But the Torah gives us only this tiny snapshot. Yeah.
Doesn't the Bereishis also indicate that when Yaakov came in, he smelled from the scent of Gan Eden?
That's the pasuk. You don't need the Bereishis Rabba for that. Yitzchak says. But Yitzchak says. He says, Re'ei Reach when Ikareach Sadeh Asher Berachah Hashem. Yeah, I mean, right. So I'm sorry, you're right. The Midrash says, what's the field? It's Gan Eden. Yeah. Absolutely, right. Okay, the second pasuk of Mishlei that the Midrash quotes here is, a deceitful man will not roast his prey, but the wealth of a diligent man is precious. And a commentary, Rashi says, God will not allow the wicked to derive benefit from the wealth they acquire through deceitful means. Now, No, we're going to see it soon. It's on the next page. Okay, this is a fascinating. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. Okay, Bereishis Rabbah 65. When Yitzchak got older, Yitzchak explained, this is not the same Rabbi Yitzchak as Yitzchak Avinu. Okay, he says, those who make the evil pious on account of bribery. Anyone who takes bribery makes the evil seem righteous. The righteousness of the truly righteous is lost upon him. This is lost upon him. It refers to Yitzchak, who lost his eyesight due to the pedestal upon which he placed Esav. And there's a similar teaching from a verse in Mishlei again, in Vav, Matzdik Rasha, Marshia Tzadik, Tovas Hashem Gam Shnehem, somebody who justifies the wicked and makes the righteous look wicked. That is an abomination to God. Another pasuk, Alkeach Shachar Misha Einu Chayvlo, do not take bribes, just as one who takes, turn over the page, this way. Bribes from one who is obligated becomes figuratively blind because he judges in his favor. One who takes bribes from one to whom he has no obligation to act thus becomes blind. So this is another perspective on explaining Yitzchak's blindness. So does that mean that Yitzchak... So again, we're looking at the question of, is Yitzchak a Nebuch? So I think he's not a Nebuch. Does that mean that Yitzchak didn't have error in judgment? That he didn't make mistakes? So... clearly, the party line is that his understanding and view of Esav was fraught with a little bit of error. Well, I shouldn't say a lot, maybe a lot of error. That he missed a whole bunch of stuff. And that's number 8, which we saw in Rashi. Yitzchak's eyes became weakened in order that Yaakov would be able to take the blessings. Now, 9, Tess, has a distinction. I only give you a little bit about Avraham. Avraham requested to be to age. People do not know whom to respect due to seniority if persons do not age. Like one of the amazing midrashim that I saw about, remember how I mentioned very briefly in passing before that when Yaakov went in to visit Paro, so Paro asks him how old he is. Okay, and Yaakov says, I'm 130 years old, and, you know, I've had a miserable life. I found in the Torah Shlema, one of the, I think it must be a midrash that Rav Kasher quotes there, is that when Paro saw Yaakov, he thought that he was Abraham. Okay? Now, of course, that suggests that Paro is pretty old. Okay, that he knew Abraham, or maybe he heard a story about this guy who looked like this, and now he's really so old But that this idea that Abraham, right? Because one of the things that we know about Yitzchak is that he looked exactly like Abraham. Okay, and that of course countered a different accusation that maybe Avimelech was the father of Yitzchak. Ela told those Yitzchak ben Abraham, Abraham holidus Yitzchak. Right, these are the generations. Yitzchak the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Yitzchak, and I think it's Rashi there who explains that Yitzchak looked exactly like Abraham, and you couldn't tell the difference between them. Which is why when you look at all those paintings of the Akedah, and Avram is painted and depicted as an old man, he may have known he was an old man, but he didn't look like an old man. And that's, you know, a flaw in just understanding of those times. So Avram requested aging because people don't know how to respect somebody due to seniority if the person doesn't look any older. Yitzchak requested suffering, saying, if a person dies without having suffered in this world, the judgment is completely against him. In other words, what suffering does, this is, Rabbi Soloveitchik, for example, wrote a lot about suffering. But what suffering does is it brings a person down in this world so that when they get to the next world, he has a defense when he arrives in the world to come. This is why Yitzchak is the first person to suffer. His eyes were weakened when he became old, and that's to give atonement to mistakes that he may have made in this life. And Yaakov requests illness. Okay, let's move on to number 10. Yitzchak's eyes became weakened along with Esav, becoming equally worse, so he would not see Esav's deeds. God said, Yitzchak will go out to the market, and those who see him will say, that's the father of the evil Esav, so I will weaken his eyes to confine him to his house. Anyone who raises an evil son or an evil student will ultimately have weakened eyes. Again, what's the point? The point is really to protect Yitzchak. Again, it doesn't help. You know, I mean, who wants to go blind? Right? It's an awful... I shouldn't say it's an awful existence. For somebody who had sight, it's an awful existence. For somebody who doesn't know any different because they were always blind, you know, they learn how to live. And I'm not, I don't want to cast any judgment. Of course, Chalila. It is what it is. But that's an approach which he has here. Okay, I want to conclude with one more midrash. And that is the next one. There is a whole line of thinking, and I thought that I gave it to you, but I guess maybe I skipped over it. Yeah, there's a whole thing which I did not give you, but I saw it somewhere. Maybe I did give it to you. Oh, no, yeah, that's where it is. I did give it to you, but I didn't read it with you. It's in Bereishis Rabbah Samach Zayin. So it's this big one over here. On the bottom there, it describes how while Esav was out and about hunting, every animal that he would trap, an angel would come and let it go. And the birds let it go. And the whole reason for that was to give Yaakov the time that he needed. You think Esav was unskilled and couldn't get done much faster than he did? But Yaakov needed to get the goats, and he needed to slaughter the goats, and his mother needed to prepare the goats, and he needed to bring it in, and he needed to have the time to have the conversation with his father. And if in the meantime Esav walks in, the gig is up. So the Midrash says that was, again, that's not so much about Yitzchak, but it's about how in order to help Yaakov, that happened. All right, the last thing which we're going to look at today is the Midrash Tanchuma. Okay, Midrash Tanchuma. So all I'm going to say is that I remember my grandmother told me that when her mother was a very short Jewish lady, like maybe she was maybe yay tall, not much more than like, I think 4'10", maybe 4'8", very short lady. Her name was Miriam. Very, proud Jewess. She brings home this guy who is described as tall, dark, and handsome. Tall, dark, and handsome. And they said to Miriam, short Jew, right? Miriam! Now, I wish I spoke the Yiddish. You're bringing home a guy? A guy? She says, not a guy. A kohen. Okay? Okay? That was my great-grandfather. So I'm named for him, so I never met him. But, if that is a definition of just a successful-looking person, so the Midrash says, oh, that's Yitzchak. Okay, so we're gonna skip to the part which is in bold on the back of the page of the Midrash Tanchuma. Kach shana Rabbeinu ha'av zocha leben b'chamisha. The father gets from the son five things, or it might work backwards. So how do we understand how this works? The first half of this passage in Toldos Siman Zayin talks about Avraham, but it's really following in Zaken Yitzchak. So Yitzchak ages, Yaakov ages. Okay, but look at the nice things, and this is where we're up to. Dvarim, Chamisha, Levent, Bechamisha Dvarim. Five things. Benoi, what's Noi?
Beauty.
Beauty, right? Handsome, right? Maybe dark and handsome. Koach, strength. Osher, wealth. Chachma, wisdom, shanim, years. How do you know that Yitzchak was Noek Yosef? Now, we know that Yosef is beautiful, the Torah tells us, but it doesn't tell us that about Yitzchak. What does it tell us about Yosef? Vayhi Yosef Yifei Toar. Okay? And he's a Baal HaChalamos. How is he described? Mia Isha Lazeh. So Yitzchak is described, Ne'emar B'Yitzchak, Mia Isha Lazeh, Haba'al Lekraseinu. Right? When Rivka sees Yitzchak, she says, oh my goodness, who is that man that's coming? And it's similar to the way that Yosef's coming towards his brothers and the way in which they describe him as a result of that is handsome. So that's how we know that Yitzchak was Noek Yosef. Next bold. Minayin Shei Yitzchak Gibor B'Koach. How do we know Yitzchak was strong? Because it says to us, Shenemar Vayeshev Yitzchak Vayachpor, Yitzchak is digging wells. Alright? Can a guy who digs all these wells, even though he has servants, he has people helping him, but look at skip to the next line of bold, Re'eg Vur Shaya B'Yadu. Okay? He was a strong guy. We also know Yaakov's involvement with wells. What's Yaakov's involvement? He pushes a big rock off a well. Okay, the apple does not fall far from the tree. Chip off the old block. Whatever expression you want to use. But Osher Minayin, how do we know he's wealthy? Shenemar Vayigdal Yish. The pasuk actually tells us that he was wealthy. Vayihilo Miknetzon, etc. And he had sheep, etc. And he had Me'esharim. B'Chachma Minayin, how do we know he was wise? She'amar Le'aviv Yinei Yish Vayitzim. Right, when they were going up the mountain, Yitzchak was able to discern, wait a second, hold on a second, there's something amiss, I sense something afoul, there is a, and that was not a bird joke, there is something missing here, and that indicates Chachma. Uvishanim, how do we know that he is gifted years? Shaya ben Kufpei, Yitzchak lived to be 180, Avram only merited 175. And so Bishvil Chamesh is the Dvarma Halalu, no Sufulo, Hey Shanim Yotem Yaviv. So the Midrash suggests that on account of these five things, he was given five extra years. All right, whatever, you know, whatever that means. That's a whole different discussion about the ages of the Avos. Okay, so in conclusion, I'm not going to review everything we've done, but I was hoping to show you that yes, Yitzchak does not get a lot of screen time in the Torah. Absolutely, that is true. And there are things which perhaps are eyebrow-raising about Yitzchak's experience and his abilities, but I think that it is clear from the many hints that the Chumash gives us, as well as some of the things which are clearly spelled out, and the little gaps that the Midrash fills in for us, that we should have a lot of pride in being able to declare Yitzchak to be Yitzchak Avinu. He was a formidable character, and somebody of whom we should be very proud, that he was one of our Avos, one we can emulate, learn from, and view as a model for our own experience. Somebody who struggled, somebody who had a good marriage, difficulty raising children, struggled with people in life, in business, and somehow managed to be the person that we turn to. When we think about Yitzchak, what's the quality we think about for Yitzchak? Yitzchak is Gevura. And that is nothing to be embarrassed about. That is not, we don't ascribe Gevura to somebody who's a Nebuch. Unfortunately, a Nebuch typically doesn't have Gevura at all. And that's why the person is a Nebuch. So, Baruch Hashem, this is Yitzchak Avinu, and Baruch Hashem, he is our forefather.
But I think he gets...